ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hello, Bill, and hello to everybody.
And our special guest today is Pamela Roach. Pamela is the mother of four children, and she's the author of a book about parental alienation and parental child abduction called Broken Lives, Broken Minds. Pamela had a very traumatic event when her first two children, her sons, Joss and Michael, who are now 26 and 25, were abducted to the US on a visitation, or what she thought was a visitation, to see their father. She wrote her book called Broken Lives, Broken Minds, which has its own website, pamelaroach.org. The book was written to raise public awareness about parental child abduction, the failure of the Hague Convention, and about parental alienation. Pamela, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello there, Bill. Nice to be invited to speak on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a very important topic, and I'm going to hand over to Ken Thompson, and I'm sure he has a number of things he wants to ask you.
Okay. Pamela, welcome to the program. Your book is a fascinating insight into this phenomena of international parental child abduction. You take it that step further and explain that it's also an extreme form of parental alienation, and a lot of people don't make that connection. Would you like to explain how you came to write the book and the events that led up to it, and perhaps some of the issues that you identified as you went through what can only be described as a horrible journey?
As I was going through back in 2000, when this first happened to me, I knew as I was going through the whole experience, I thought to myself, this has got to be written. Now, I'm not a writer, and I had to get help to write the book. And it was in 2012 that I suddenly thought, right, I'm going to start now. I've got to start writing about all this. And I gathered together all my information, all the legal papers. There was loads of it. Set out a timeline, and I started. And I just wrote down what happened. And I did a lot of reading and research for this as well on using the books on parental alienation by the experts to explain what had actually happened. That helped a lot because I think a lot of people, the children get abducted, they're confused, they don't understand why. They even haven't heard of parental alienation. Mm. They don't know.
Mm.
But abduction is definitely to do with alienation. It's alienation in the extreme.
Yeah, a lot of parents who go through this process become quite frustrated by a whole lot of things. But one of the things they often become frustrated by is the response they get from other people who say, well, the child's okay because the child is with one of its parents. It's not as if the child has been abducted by a stranger.
Yes, I know. And this is terrible. they don't see it as being the big deal that it is.
A lot of people seem to underestimate the mental health issues that are associated with the parent who's actually abducted the child. Did you do a lot of research into that aspect as well?
The abductor. Oh, yes. I mean, my ex was what they call a cluster B type personality disorder. For those who don't know what that is, it's characterized by they're dramatic, overly emotional, unpredictable thinking or behavior. They include antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, and histrionic personality disorder. That is basically a very common trait that these abductors have.
Yes, and that's not a good environment for children to be in at any time in any way at all.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, there's a charity here called PACT. Was called PACT. It's not anymore. It's run by Lady Catherine Meyer. I don't know if you've heard her story. That was very famous back in the 90s.
Yes, yes, and the work that she's done to raise awareness to this issue through that organisation has been extraordinary, and she's a beacon for anybody who's going through this process.
Yeah, she is a beacon for anybody going through this, and I referred to her book, A Loss in My Book, and raised the problems with the flaws in the Hague Convention, the loopholes that need to be closed.
We hear a lot about the Hague Convention and the Hague Convention on the Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction, to give it its full title. The Hague Convention was introduced in the 80s, and it was designed to overcome problems of children who've been abducted to other countries. You've highlighted some issues with that in your book. Would you like to explain a little bit about what those issues are and how you think that they could perhaps be addressed?
Yes, well, basically, I think it's outdated. Because of this one particular loophole, there are a few others, but this one in particular should be closed or modified in some way, improved, because it has become the abductor's charter, and coaches and horses are walking through it, if you like.
And which part of the convention are you referring
to? It's Article 13B. Paragraph 1 refers to the grave risk of harm if the child is returned to its country of residence. Now, this is usually narrowly defined by returning to a country which is in a zone of famine or war or a situation of serious abuse and neglect. So paragraph 2 of this, now this is the crux, is child's objections, and there is no age given for this. It's up to the judge's discretion as to whether the child is mature enough to say what they want to do. Now, you know, a lot of judges, because there's not really enough, I know it's becoming more a topic that people are becoming aware of, but they're not aware that the child could be alienated and indoctrinated. And if the child says, I don't want to go home, I want to stay here, they will listen to the child. And, you know, these children of, well, as I said, there's not even an age given for it. I mean, they could be 8. What is mature? 8 or 14 or, you know? And these children, they don't know what decisions they're making by deciding what country they should live with or what parent at that age, and the consequences of it all. So that's the main problem, and that's the problem I tried to get across in my book.
Yeah, and it is a big problem, and it's not the only loophole. There are probably 3 major loopholes, and they're the 3 special defences that are available under the provisions of the Hague Convention. And, you know, they have become interpreted far more widely than they were ever intended to. The explanatory notes to the convention talk about how narrowly they should be interpreted. But unfortunately, over the last 30 or so years, a lot of case law has been established that has weakened the original intent of the Hague Convention. And a lot of the judges, as you said, aren't familiar with these types of cases. In a lot of countries, these cases are heard at a local level, and a lot of judges have no experience with cases of this complexity, and they tend to treat these cases as local custody matters, and they introduce a whole lot of criteria that should never be introduced to these cases. And I think in your book that stands out very, very clearly, that's what happened in your case.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the judge that originally heard our Hague Convention case, I found out later by contacting his court reporter, who'd been with him for 15-odd years. I said, look, has this judge ever heard a Hague Convention case before? And he said no. It was quite obvious when in the courtroom that he hadn't as well. And now, ironically, my case was put up to federal court, all right, because it was international. It wasn't small county court. But strangely enough, in the States, anyway, the smaller courts are the ones that hear the custody hearings. The federal courts are more familiar with criminal cases, murder cases, things like this, but certainly not anything to do with custody. And this judge turned around and, I mean, he really didn't know what to do with it. I think he said, well, it looks like I'm going to have to play God here. No, Hague Convention is not about playing God.
No,
it's about basically looking at the paperwork, right, who's got custody, this, that and the other, and sending them home. I mean, that's the spirit of the whole convention.
Exactly.
That's what it was set up to do. But unfortunately, it's not working.
No, it's not working. Certainly doesn't seem to be working in a large number of cases in the way that it was intended to work when it was first brought out in the 1980s. You got caught up, as so many other parents do who find themselves in this situation, and the children became caught up in an incredibly complex and time-consuming court case, which of course enabled the abducting parent to completely brainwash the children. And in your case, that was a very severe example of what an abducting parent can do if the court doesn't act swiftly. Now, Hague Convention cases are meant to be resolved within a time frame of about 6 weeks.
My only option was to fight a full-blown custody case out there in the States, which I did because I believed that justice would prevail.
And we're going to take a short break now with a song called Broken Wings by Naturally 7.
It's your time, so leave those others behind. It's a new day, cause yesterday you were blind. It's not a mystery or a secret to keep, cause we won't sleep.
In a little while, we're gonna be free. In a little while, it'll be just you and me moving far from here. Leaving all I can,
cause we won't sleep.
Wait a minute now, how can I go on? Wait a minute now, I don't think I'm that strong to do it by myself.
Speaking with Pamela Roach, the author of Broken Lives, Broken Minds. Pamela, you were still putting your faith in the American legal system at this stage.
If I said the truth and everything else, and, you know, I mean, I just had to fight to get them back. And so that's why it dragged on so long. And that actual proper custody case wasn't heard till 2002, which was 2 years after the Hague Convention case. Okay. By then, I mean, they had been so entrenched with indoctrination and disaster. As you've read the book, one of my sons just went completely off the scales, mad. He had a psychotic breakdown after being in his father's custody for 3 months.
The court didn't make any inquiries or make any orders for inquiries to be made back in the UK either about the child's or the history of the children.
Yeah, now this was absolutely terrible. The incompetence of the mental health professionals. It should have never have got to the case that there was a custody case out there. I did speak to some professionals and they said, look, don't go and fight this case out there because you're not going to win it. It's in America. Okay, but I said, no, I've got to. These are my children. I've got to try. You know, I believe that there must be some hope. Yeah, no, this one particular woman who appeared in federal court, which, you know, her opinion was going to sway the judge.
Well, her opinion set the scene that you then had to try and fix.
She didn't. She never called me in the UK. She never called the CPS, well, our equivalent of the CPS, Child Protective Services, the school, or anybody to find out what was going on. And I'd never even met her. And there I was in federal court with this psychologist speaking out against me and my husband and saying, I think these children ought to stay here for further evaluation.
Mm.
I mean, and that was disastrous. And that led to months of them staying there. And it was absolutely terrible. And they got she got away with it all.
On top of this, you had all these outrageous allegations that were made against you and against your husband. And as time went on, the nature of those allegations became more extreme and more extensive.
Yes, they got worse. 3-4 months later, they got sexual abuse allegations were thrown in, and they dislocated hips.
Hmm.
I mean, all sorts of crazy things.
And things that could have been easily verified by making some quick telephone calls to schools and doctors in the UK.
There was not one telephone call that was made to the UK by these people. The only person who did make the telephone calls was the expert witness that we hired. And he spoke to the school, friends, parents of friends of the children, all these sort of people, and they said, look, this is absolute nonsense. You know, we've known this family for a long time. We live in a small Dorset market town, and people know what's going on, you know. It's not like London or somewhere.
Mm.
Everybody knows everybody, really. It's kind of like that. And they said that this is absolute nonsense. But this was far too late, of course, because they'd already been there for 2 years.
It just begs the question, though, why? Why did they run the case that way? Why didn't the court order those types of inquiries to be made? It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all. But they didn't. I mean, there was so much that was, God, you know, how can I describe it? You know, Kafkaesque, I think, is the right word. You know, nightmarish when you're trapped in this machine that you can't get out of, you know? It just beggared belief. There was so much incompetence that I witnessed. Yes, you know, why weren't they looking at the hard practical evidence, the medical papers from our doctor's surgery about how, you know, especially my son Joss, okay, he was the one who really, really suffered through all this. He was a sensitive child, okay? And he went absolutely crazy. He had a psychotic breakdown, as I told you.
Mm.
He was put on psychotropic drugs and is still on them to this day. His life has not been normal since. He can't do anything. He can't work. He just stays at home and just sits on an Xbox. It's terrible.
We're speaking with Pamela Roach, who's the author of a book, Broken Lives, Broken Minds. Pamela, this is Bill Cable. Just with your boys, you've lost 10 years at least from their lives, I guess. Michael, I think you're seeing. Are you seeing Joss at all?
No. Now, Michael did come over this Christmas. He wanted to go to Berlin, and he came over and stayed with me for a month this Christmas. Yes, I have gradually been seeing him since he was 17. But, you know, sporadically, maybe once a year, he came over. And at first it was extremely difficult, you know, because we just couldn't talk about what had happened, although I was desperate to. But I realized I couldn't go near there because he couldn't cope with it at all. So I thought, okay, we'll just have to pretend that nothing happened. My son, Joss, I did see for the first time in, 15 years. We went over there at Christmas time. It was Michael's idea. He said, look, I think, you know, you should get, his words were, acclimatized, Joss, you know, integrated with him a bit. You know, he ought to see you. And I thought, oh, well, okay, now, this is great. If you're suggesting this and you're coming with me, I'll do this. Bottom line was, it was pretty disastrous because, you know, he was still, he's living with his father. And I said to Michael, look, he might come out, I'll take him out for lunch or something, but he'll still be going back to his father and that household and the grandmother as well. The grandmother was a big part of this alienation. Okay, as often is the case, you know, the whole family get involved.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd see him and then he'd go back to the house and they'd all badmouth me and he'd not want to come and see me again for lunch. And it was all so strained anyway. I mean, it is so difficult to... I mean, I just kept staring at him the whole time. You know, this is this boy that, you know, I loved and raised for 11 years and hadn't been able to see and was now an adult. It was so surreal. But it didn't work out well at all, you know, because his father was there, basically. The way I can describe it is like going to visit your child who's in a cult. Take the child out, okay, and see them for an hour or whatever you're allowed, and then send them back to the cult. Now, would anybody do that? No.
The cult analogy is one that you hear quite often involving in cases involving international parental child abduction, because the child has been taken away from everything they know, has been put in a false environment, and is raised to believe a whole lot of things that just simply aren't true.
Yeah. Incidentally, the age that they're most susceptible to this is between the is 9 and 12, between the ages of 9 and 12, that I learnt in my studies of this terrible phenomenon.
We don't seem to get those happy endings, but this book has been written as a lesson for judges, for parents to be aware of it, and just for general people to have some understanding of the whole area of parental child abduction. But, Pamela, unfortunately, we've reached the stage of the program where we like to ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
Yes. I chose Whitney Houston, The Greatest Love of All. And I like the lyrics of this song, especially the beginning. I believe the children are the future, our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. And children are the future, and we are not to mess with their minds as parents when they're young, and because it would just, it leads to lifelong disastrous psychological effects for them.
are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadows. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I live as I believe. No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity. Because the greatest love of all is happening to me. I found the greatest love of all inside of me. The greatest love of all is easy to...
And that was The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again with our guest, Pamela Roach, or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for us now to thank our special guest today, Pamela Roach. Thank you very much for being on Dads on the Air.
Thanks, Pamela.
Thanks very much for asking me to be on.
I will get the word out.
Okay.
So, yes, thank you very much, Pamela, and we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air. So for now, it's goodbye from us, from Bill Cable, and
goodbye, everybody,
and Ken Thompson. So we'll see you next week.